will come to a meeting like this, one will return and become a disciple. Out of every 5 disciples that come, one will become a devotee. This type of a meeting is not for everyone, because it hits you hard in the ego. It makes you feel that your anger, your doubts, your suspicions, your frustrations, your jealousies, your pettiness do not exist. They've been haunting you for years, and it's up to you to get rid of them. It makes you realize that your possessions, your thought of ownership, taking care of yourself, your idea of God, your idea of the world, of the universe, of your job, of your loved ones, are all nonsense. Most people do not like to hear this. People like to be told things that they're used to. They like to be told you'll go far in life. You'll become a successful accountant or a nurse. You'll make a lot of money. You'll have a good family. But this is not that type of a world. We have a wrong conception of the world in which we live. You see, what difference does it make what happens to you if you do not realize who you are? And I'm not just speaking of dry knowledge. I know most of you here have read every book that's ever been written. But it's all dry knowledge. The whole idea is to make this a living embodiment of consciousness. And most people do not want to waste the effort to do this. They're used to buying something, they pay their cash, and they get their goods here in the West. This is not how it works. The first step in spiritual awakening is to realize you're divinely ignorant. And that's not an insult. I've had people walk out when I said this. That's why I say divinely ignorant. With all humility, you must realize this, first of all, that you are divinely ignorant, which means that you don't really understand anything. All your conceptual ideas, all your preconceived ideas, everything you've learned as a boy or as a girl, all the ideas and feelings and emotions you grew up with are basically wrong. They're all erroneous. And they must be transcended. The only way to begin to transcend this is to admit to yourself, I am divinely ignorant, and I really do not know what anything is. I really know nothing. I don't know what anything is. As an example, we don't know what a human being is. We have no idea what it is. It just appears at birth. and we take it for granted. We don't know where the dog is. Where did it come from? How did it arrive? We know it has four legs and it's a dog, so we give it the name dog. Like someone gave you the name Mark, or Ed, or Mary. But what are these things for real? We don't know what a tree is. We gave it the name tree. But what is it really? It has leaves. Some trees produce oranges, some trees produce grapefruits. Why? What's its purpose? Where did it come from originally? And what came first? The tree or the seed? We don't know. We have no idea. We don't know what the sun is, or the moon, or the stars. All we can figure out what they do. They keep us warm. The sun does. But we have no idea what it really is, why it exists. Why does anything exist? Why do we exist? We have no idea. But we're brought up in a world of effects. And we begin to respond to the effects of the world at an early age. We develop feelings of jealousy, anger, mistrust, envy, fear. All these feelings are developed at an early age. And we don't know why. We act accordingly. We cause problems for ourselves. We try to solve them. And we spend all of our lives solving problems. Before you know it, we turn around. We're 80, 90 years old. It's time to go. Where are we? We have no idea. And those of us who think we've accomplished something materialistically, we think we've done good deeds. We've become successful in business, in world affairs, in politics. Yet we have to leave it all behind. Everything we worked so hard for. Nothing remains. When it's time to leave the body, everything goes. And we're alone. Therefore, doesn't it make sense that we should search for the answers of life? What is life all about? Doesn't that make sense to go after that? For if we find that, we will become free. But if we keep involving ourselves in our fears, gain, loss, happy, sad, sick, healthy, and so forth, we're wasting our precious time. It is true, as long as you believe that you are the body, you're going to be reborn again and again and again. And you will be reborn to parents that you left off. In other words, before you die, if there's such a thing. If you're filled with doubt and anger, and animosity and greed and jealousy and whatever, you're going to be reborn to parents with those qualities. And you will have those qualities again. You will have to work them out. But the ultimate truth is that nothing I'm talking about is real. It is only for those deluded people who believe that they are the body. Reincarnation does not exist. Rebirth does not exist. Death does not exist. All these negative qualities I told you about do not exist. But as long as you believe your body is for real, these qualities will come to you. They come to everyone who believes they are the body. It behooves you, therefore, to stop reading so many books, to stop running around to so many teachers and so many meetings. I'm not trying to tell you to come here all the time. What I'm trying to tell you is this. Find a teaching that is suitable for you at your stage of development. Whether it's one, if it's one of the major religions, or Buddhism, or whatever it may be. If that's what you're into, practice, 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 and become a living embodiment of the teaching. With going around from teacher to teacher, going around from meeting to meeting, and not practicing anything will get you nowhere. Think about this. My own personal experiences probably have come to me because in the last life or somewhere before I took on this body, which doesn't exist, I must have practiced intense sadhana. Otherwise, why would I be born and see a figure of Ramana Maharshi when I was a baby? Why would I be drawn to India? And why would I have personal experiences when my individuality was lost and I merged into infinite consciousness? I didn't ask for these experiences. I didn't ask to be sitting here today. Everything just happens. Whatever is happening in your experiences, do not fight them. You may say, but Robert, my experience is terrible. It makes no difference. Do not fight your experiences. Merely observe them. Watch them. Do not react to them. Do nothing. Oh, your body will do whatever it has to do. But do not react to your anger. Do not react to your doubt. Change your mind as fast as possible. When doubt comes to you, when anger comes to you, when fear comes to you, do not entertain it. But start doing a mantra. Sing a spiritual song. Do japa. Do whatever you have to do to get rid of the situation at the moment. And then go on with your deeper spiritual practices. But do not entertain fears, doubts, anger. The best way, of course, is to ask yourself, to whom does this come? Who is angry? And something will say, me, in anger. Hold on to that me. Don't let go of it. Find out its source. Where did it arise? Who gave it birth? If you truly follow it to its source, you will find that anger never existed. It's okay. It doesn't matter. No one can hurt you unless you're irritable. Makes no difference what anybody says, or what they do, or what you believe you see them doing. That's not the problem. The problem is your reaction. Feeling that something is wrong. What can be wrong? If you knew who you were, you would laugh. The whole world would become laughable. So all I can do for you is to confess my experiences. And when I use the pronoun I am referring to consciousness, to omnipresence. Everything becomes the self when I say I. That includes everybody here. So I confess to you that I am not the body or mind. I am not any experience. I am not the world. I am not anything that you can see, touch, taste, smell, or feel. I am absolute reality. I am consciousness. I am infinite intelligence. I am Satchitananda. I am Nirvana, emptiness. I am love, pure awareness, joy, bliss. I am that I am. That is the truth about I, about you, about me, and there's nothing else. Become joyful, rejoice. Stay centered. Yesterday never existed. Tomorrow will never come. The only moment you have is this moment, now. What you think about yourself now determines what happens to you tomorrow. So why play games? As I said, stop reading books. Stop going to meetings so much. Spend time with yourself on satsang. Find yourself. Know who you are. And you will be the happiest person on earth. Everything is consciousness. Everything. Everything is consciousness. The reason that some of us can't feel it is because we're wrapped up in ourselves. I don't mean the real self, I mean our ego selves. We're so wrapped up in our affairs, and we're so wrapped up in trying to become enlightened, that we never will. It's not a question of trying to become enlightened. Do you know in reality there's no such word? What's enlightenment? What's self-realization? There are concepts, there are words. There's no such word. So what we're trying to become is something that doesn't exist. How can we ever become it? What exists, you are already. What doesn't exist, you never can become. What do you think you are? You can tell by your thinking patterns. What do you think most of the day? As an example, what did you think about this morning as soon as you opened your eyes? Were you worried about breakfast? Were you concerned you're getting too fat or too thin? Were you concerned over your hair or over another person? Were you thinking about your neighbors trying to hurt you? Or someone cheated you? Or someone stole something from you 10 years ago and you can't get out of your mind? What do you think about all day long? This is what keeps you back. You must learn to catch yourself. Whenever some condition arises, catch yourself by asking yourself, to whom does it come? Even if you have to do this 1,000 times a day, it's okay. It's better than thinking the thoughts you do think 1,000 times a day, isn't it? Catch yourself. To whom does it come? To me? Hold on to the me. What is me? Who is me? Ask yourself. Follow the me to the source. Ask yourself how the me arose. Where did it come from to begin with? Then your mind will become still, maybe for only a few seconds. And then another thought will come. Practice the same procedure. To whom does this come? And you can do other things. You can ask yourself, what difference does it make what happens to me? In reality, I am eternal, immortal. In reality, I was never born, can never die. So what difference does the appearance make at this time? I seem to be going through whatever I'm supposed to go through karmically. Why should I fight it? When you stop fighting, you have won the battle. For when you stop fighting, your mind becomes calm once again. And when your mind becomes calm, you automatically become your real self. Then you forget trying to become something else, trying to become enlightened. You forget about those terms. You simply abide in yourself. That's all you've got to do. And yourself means a quiet mind. That's the definition of yourself. A quiet, still mind. When your mind is quiet, you have bliss. You have love. You have compassion. You have jnana, wisdom. When your mind is noisy, you have doubts, suspicions, anger, greed, jealousy. It's up to you. It makes no difference how deep those samskaras are, those tendencies. Weigh them out one by one by asking yourself to whom they come and by following the eye thread to its culmination, and you will be free. Yesterday I received an interesting gift in the mail from New York, these jogging shoes. And I didn't know I sent them, I didn't remember the name. And I also received a letter. And I remember this guy. He used to come to the meetings before he came here, when we were Jeffs. He came to about 6 meetings. He always used to sit in the back and hardly say anything. But it's amazing what satsang does for a person. And he wrote me one of the most profoundest letters I've ever written, I've ever seen, or read. And I've read many. And I want to share this with you, because I think it's important. I don't know why he sent me the shoes. His name is Andy Pinkard. He's a friend of Richard's. He's from Santa Cruz, but he's living in Manopac, New York. It starts here and continues here. Mary, would you like to read? Read it slowly.
I will.
Continues here.
Is this part of the letter?
It's after this.
It's after this. Yeah. Okay.
I can really understand what you're saying.
Dear Robert, seeing this card brought you to mind. However, when I bought it, had no idea it said anything about a birthday inside. Consider it a metaphorical paradox. Never being born, I am born in each moment. I haven't been in touch with you in a while. So just to let you know who is writing this, I spoke with you several times on the phone over the past 6 months or so, after attending a couple of meetings at Jeff V's apartment back in April. I'm not sure why I'm writing you now. I have nothing specific to say. I feel like a great reel of opening up has taken place recently, and yet nothing has really changed at all. The main gist of it is that the self is being continually revealed as absolutely inescapable. This entire world of appearance is nothing but an expression of the self. Bondage or liberation, suffering or bliss, there is no distinction in the light of the truth. I mean, whether this body-mind is identified or not, it is still consciousness and nothing else. Consciousness is all there is. The form that it takes on in this incredibly diverse world is irrelevant. Exactly what does realization mean when everything is already the self? The self realizes itself in all forms of existence. I really must say that I don't care if Andy Kinkhart continues to be caught up in this conceptual world of appearance. I know, even if I forget, that I am one with God and that everything that happens is His will. It cannot be otherwise. God is everything. I guess the most concise way of expressing it in words is that it is a matter of seeing that nothing exists independently. The real substance of anything is void. Even this sounds pathetically limiting. The freedom of understanding is the absence of all identification. I can't even say neti neti. Who says it? I don't know, Robert. It just feels like if there is an understanding that brings about enlightenment, it really doesn't change a thing, except maybe that there's just nothing to resist anymore. There is no one to gain or lose anything. Everything is one. Concepts are so boring. Ironically enough, despite the feeling lately that there is nothing to say or hear about the truth, I've been spontaneously writing down what might be called observations that keep popping up lately. I'll include some of this letter for your entertainment, if you feel so inclined to look at them. Otherwise, I just want to share a feeling of quiet gratefulness, not for or to anything in particular, just peaceful thanks, Andy. P.S. I'll be in New York until around November 1st, at which time I plan to leave for Taiwan, although that keeps getting delayed. I'll send you a postcard. You can write to this address and it will be forwarded if I'm not here. And the address is in New York.
Now, what do you think of that?
That's very nice.
The reason I'm sharing it with you is because I want you to realize that this comes from the heart. It does not come from book learning, I can tell. I can pick up an article and tell you where it's from. Whether it's from a person's heart, from his consciousness, or whether it's from a book. This comes straight from the heart. Any comments?
It's interesting. He started expressing and talking, and after a while it seemed like he started drooling a little bit in words, and then he came back into expression again.
You can tell straight from the heart.
You can feel it.
Even reading it, I could feel
not only for the heart, it's surcharged with energy.
He has a PhD in English and he teaches English overseas.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I must cast a dissenting vote.
Okay.
To stir things up in my usual role.
Good.
No, I found it, first of all, I find that there is a tendency, a very strong tendency on the part of disciples or adherents or students, chelas, to mouth, to repeat the teachings of the teacher.
Yes.
There's a very strong tendency of that sort, and you, especially if you know the people in the group, you begin to hear these things that you heard from the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of felt that about it, and it seemed, as I heard it, it seemed to me like such an intellectualization of the divine flow. I mean, you can say that what I'm about to say, that I'm sinking into materiality, but it seemed to me that, I mean, this also, these are words, these are material words, these are ideas. What if he had said, oh, the sun was intensely hot this morning, you know. I felt tremendous hunger. I ate meat. I loved the meat. I wanted to hike to the top of the mountain, etc., etc. It seems to me that this would have expressed the sense of oneness, the sense of desire for the one, more than these intellectualizations.
Well, that's your opinion, of course, and I appreciate it. But remember, Arnold, he's speaking from his own experiences. I can tell. What you're speaking of is good also. It depends on the person. It depends who they are. And also depends how you perceive it. But it's your perception, and that's good. What else can I say?
I can try to be more argumentative. That's what I can try.
I'm not going to give you an argument.
No.
Maybe it was the way I read it. Now, if he were here, and he said it in his own words, from his heart, then it would be more emphatic. It would be more feeling. I'm only reading somebody else's words.
I don't think it was the way you read it. No, I don't think that. I don't think so. No, you read very.
No, I remember this guy. And he's a very sincere person.
Well, I'm not saying he wasn't. I think it is sincere, but it just seems to me that it is that over the mental element is dominates rather than
well, this is his confession
of the one.
This is his confession. This is what he feels. To me, it's just sheer beauty. But it's an interesting comment. Any other comments?
I just wanted to say that it's sort of off the target of it, but I thought Mary did a very good job of presenting it in a very clean, understandable way. Yeah, it was good.
You know, what moved me was I like when he said that there's now the only thing that's different now is there's no resistance. There's no resistance.
Yes.
And that seems to be the essence of the whole thing. Before, he was being amazed, having his own will and adding his own trying to be enlightened or wanting. And now he doesn't know anything like, and there's no resistance to what is. He just, he said, absence of all identification. Like lost in ignorance, and no resistance to ignorance anymore.
That's a good observation also, sure.
So the ego is just always a resistance to that divine ignorance.
I also thought it was unselfish. It wasn't asking you a question like leading points so that you would return something. It was totally selfless.
Yes, that's true too.
From the heart.
What I'm talking about, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but...
Be a dead horse.
Okay. Somehow, after I spoke, what came to my mind was memories of Japan. And I'm thinking of the way, you know, the way that the tea is, the tea house, the way the tea is served. That's the of course, there are many examples, but again, the tea ceremony... I remember the fences, you know, walking down the little alleys, the care that we know that they give to everything without anything being said. I mean, you can spend a day in a Zen monastery or in a Zen temple, and nothing need be said because it's all there. It's expressed in every gesture, every movement, just as with the tea ceremony. And so it's ineffable. You know, it's beyond words.
Yes.
And that's a very moving experience. To approach it that way.
Are you suggesting you should have sent me a flying card?
That you should what?
Sent me a flying card.
It would have been very more original, I think. So yes, I would say yes.
That's his happy birthday. No, that's your opinion again, and I respect your opinion. But he's coming from a different place. It's his feelings, his emotions, his self-expressing.
But the letter seems to be like a mirror, and everyone's reflecting on what
of course.
Themselves. It's not
of course.
Yeah,
of course. That's why I asked.
Yeah, no, I realized that. I'm excited about the whole process.
Good observation. Yeah. That's true.
See, whatever you tell me comes from your own experience, from your own consciousness. So you're talking about yourself, whatever you say. I shouldn't say that, Charles, anything. Okay, now what would you like me to talk about?
Yeah, consciousness is all there is, right? That consciousness that we're talking about has to be prior to our waking state, so it has to be even similar to deep sleep state.
Yes.
So
the difference between consciousness and deep sleep is in deep sleep you're not conscious. In consciousness you're aware of what's going on. In deep sleep you're in a natural state, but you're not conscious.
If consciousness is all there is, why are we losing consciousness when we sleep? Why is that?
You're not losing consciousness.
No.
You're just not conscious because you're in deep sleep. It's in a state of ignorance.
So when enlightenment occurs, even in deep sleep, there won't be a loss of consciousness?
When enlightenment occurs, you will not be in deep sleep.
Okay, so we're in deep sleep because we're...
Because you're not aware. But that's the closest thing to realization.
Is that because the mind is still kind of alive and functioning?
It's because you're dead to the world. And you're dead to everything. And the mind is functioning as deep sleep, yes.
The mind is functioning.
As deep sleep.
That's interesting. And when everything is understood, and the mind is transcended... Then
there's pure awareness.
Then there's no deep sleep.
Then there's just pure awareness.
There's no thoughts either. The brain is functioning, but the thoughts aren't in deep sleep.
That's true. Mm. Yes.
Robert, I just wanted to share with you a feeling I had when I came to your first talk. I thought that what you said was for me was the absolute truth. But when I went home and woke up the next morning, I felt such anger, and in fact, I shared it with Ed, a frustration that, in fact, I renewed my ambition to accomplish things, which is because I felt, I guess the trouble I had was, that is true, but we have a role to play. Apparently, there is a game to play, and I accept the fact that when you play a game, you have to play it with all the rules that are there. You don't have to believe that it's real, but you have to play it. And I don't want to rot away and have a nihilistic attitude toward life, because I get a pleasure out of certain things, the acquisition of little things that I enjoy reading about and studying, which is just mind things, or writing, or producing, accomplishing is actually just as pleasurable, if not more, than sitting quietly and meditating and going to that silence. I do know what you say is down deep is correct. I know it's the truth. But as long as we're in this little game, this 80-year game that we play, 70, 80 years, I feel that I'm not taking advantage of those senses, those things that were stuck in this body of mine that do give me little jolts of pleasure. And maybe I misread what you said. I miss the joy and the love and the embracing of nature, life, people, music, all that's there.
That's a good question. Let's go to your first point. You are angry. That's exactly what your mind wants you to be. When a person hears truth for the first time, when they hear the higher truth, the mind is going to begin to fight. It does not want to be annihilated. It will fight you at every turn. And things may get progressively worse in the beginning mentally. Now when you understand what's going on, you simply observe that condition. And it's the ego fighting you. That's the first one. Now here's the second part. Nobody tells you that when you become realized, you will stop doing everything or anything. If you're a painter, you will become a better painter. If you're a sculptor, you'll be a better sculptor. You will feel joy and bliss. But you have to bear in mind that you are not the doer. And whatever your body is supposed to do in this incarnation, it's going to do. It has nothing to do with you. Therefore, you will lose nothing. If you enjoy nature, like you said, you will enjoy it 1,000 times greater because you'll have a deeper understanding of where it comes from. It comes from you. It's the self. And you'll feel greater bliss. So you lose nothing and you gain everything. It's not a question of giving up. It's a question of gaining. The body in itself is very limited. When you realize who you really are, you become omnipresent. And you enjoy things a million times more. Everything becomes more intense, more real. But you understand where it's coming from. You understand the reality. And you can say, well, this is the self, and I am God. And that becomes very clear to you.
But if it's true, if it's all an illusion anyway, then that is also, I'm sort of, what's the point of it all?
The point is you're playing a game, like you said. You realize it's an illusion, but you're still playing your part.
Okay.
It's like you take a step backward and you watch, as if you're watching a movie. But you're in the movie also. So you're apart from the movie, and you're in the movie. You're both. So you can be totally free and unattached, but you're still doing the work.
I guess what I'm looking for is permission to play the game. That, you know, playing the game is okay to do, even if you know it's a game.
But remember, you have nothing to do with it.
Well, the self is playing a game with me, and I'm involved.
If you search for the self, you transcend the personality. The personality becomes totally transcendent and merges in the self, one consciousness. And then you play the game in a different way, but you play the game. Nobody says you're going to go to a cave and meditate for the rest of your life. You'll be active. And you keep playing the game, but it'll be different.
Doesn't it seem that the ego enjoys personally certain things? And I think when you transcend the ego and the personal enjoyment, you can enjoy that same thing, but on a universal level. And the enjoyment is increased, and it's not. So the ego is fighting for that personal enjoyment. It seems. Yeah.
That's true, too.
And another point sometimes is, it seems so, when you're going through this stuff, that you may find, or some people find, that they get detached or uninvolved in the things that they have been involved in for a temporary amount of time. And then when something happens, some change happens, and they go back into whatever it was spontaneously for the much more enjoyment and much more enthusiasm and whatnot.
Yes, but the main point to remember is this. In the beginning stages, only a negativity might get worse. You might become more angry, more doubtful, more suspicious, more hateful. And remember why. It's your ego fighting you at every turn, saying, don't go along with this teaching.
Because you're going to lose
everything. Yes.
You'll lose everything.
The ego is not forced to be annihilated. So in the beginning, it will fight you at every turn. But don't fight back by reacting. Simply observe and watch and ask yourself, to whom is this happening? And you'll find out. That's what you're going to do.
I've been angry before over things like this.
That's a good sign. There's a name for that. It's called chemicalization. There are changes taking place inside of you. And everything is coming to the surface to be totally transcended. So do not pay attention to those feelings. Ignore them by asking yourself, when do they come? And they'll go away. They will become weaker and weaker every time you ask the question. They will become weaker and weaker every time. It happens to nearly everyone. Appear to go through certain levels.
After you go through certain levels to reach that point?
Sometimes you appear to go through certain levels. But in reality, you just awaken. There's a story about the Buddha. When he decided to go under the Bo tree, and sit there for 30 days until he's enlightened. Not for 30 days. He was just going to sit under the tree until something happened. He would either die or awaken. So after about 30 days, his disciples were sitting around him. They saw him opening his eyes and they were shining. And they said, Master, what happened to you? Have you seen God? And he said, no. Have you become self-realized? He said, no. And they asked him all kinds of questions, and he answered, no. So they finally, in unison, said, well, what happened? And he smiled and he said, I'm awake. It's the same with us. We appear to go through stages, and then one day we just wake up. As if we've been asleep for years. Think of the times you have a long dream, or a recurring dream over and over, and the dream appears so real, and in the dream you're trying to fight it, and you're trying to go through all these experiences, but you can't wake up. You try all kinds of spiritual practices, and then you wake up. Everything is gone. It was only a dream. In the same way, one day we'll wake up from this dream. Same thing. See, right now most of you believe the things that you're dreaming are for real. For example, when I received the spirit of shoes, I didn't feel a feeling of exhilaration. Or a feeling of sadness. I just observed the shoes and I said, what nice shoes. And I wore them. That's it. When I'm immersed in my own bliss, things do not make me blissful or happier. Things are just here to enjoy, to look, to see, to observe. But your own bliss never leaves you. For your true nature is bliss. That's your own nature. Everything else is neither good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. So to you, the things that may appear bad may appear good to someone else. As an example, a man is allowed one wife, and that's good. If you go to Arabia, you're allowed three wives, and that's good. So that may be bad to some of us here. And over there, it's good. Take another example. Let's say if you go to the North Pole and you visit your friend as an Eskimo, the first thing he will tell you to do is to sleep with his wife. It's an honor. If you don't, you'll be insulted. Now, how many of you guys would let me sleep with your wife? You see what I mean? Nothing is either good or bad. Only thinking makes it so. So look at all the things that make you angry. It's all nonsense. Forget it and be happy.
I have a question.
Sure.
If shoes came to you, like in a package, and they were dirty, grimy, and smelled really bad, and looked really bad, would you think that they were nice shoes, or would you think that they were interesting shoes?
I wouldn't think they were good or bad and nice or not nice. I would just observe them and look at them. If I felt like wearing them, I would. If I don't, I don't.
These you observed, they were nice. I'm wondering if the other ones you would say, these were interesting.
I didn't observe they were nice. I observed they were shoes.
You said nice, so I thought.
What I meant is I looked them over, I examined them carefully. I never heard of the brand before. And I just put them on. And everybody tells me what nice shoes.
Mine are interesting. my used ones.
Well, you see the ones I used to wear before. There's a hole in the top. I don't have a four now. The heels are gone. But everything is unfolding as it should. There are no mistakes. Remember that. All is well, everyone. Just the way it is. And remember, the only reason you get excited or mad is because your world is not turning the way you want. That's all. But if you forget about your world and merge in consciousness, everything will be good. For instance, you say, my uncle died, and I think that's bad. But for him, it's good, because he's free. And he can continue his sojourn, whatever he's doing. But for you, it's bad. You inherit $1 million. For you, it's good. For your neighbor, it's bad. Because she becomes jealous and she shoots you.
So for the daughter, it's really good.
<She's jealous. laughs> Or if inheritance is good.
But she disappears good.
I'm sure for a while.
Then somebody marries her for her money.
Of course.
And makes her miserable and shoots her. Well, it turns out to be dead.
It goes on and on. It never stops.
Good for her when she gets shot. She's released.
Yeah, but then she's born as a crocodile.
Yeah. Well, do you see why we should not react?
Yeah.
Because we don't know what's good or bad.
We don't know what anything is.
Okay. Lord, are you awfully quiet today?
So, Robert, you were just spontaneously abiding a divine ignorance without any teaching, without ever reading anything about spiritual life?
No. Yes. And no.
That's an exact answer. Yes and no. That's right.
In the beginning, I never read anything. Later on, I did.
So when you, before you read, were you abiding at divine ignorance?
Yes. I told the story on Thursday what happened.
Do you think when this human evolutionary cycle is over, that may be the end of it? I mean, in a very, very long scheme of things, that whatever this experiment or whatever this is runs its course and this planet will go, mm-hmm. and the human form will probably go with it unless we're few or blown over mm-hmm. to a new verdant planet or something.
Then we'll come back again. And all things will be repeated. Until you wake up.
I do hope there are other places.
In your mind. Only in your mind.
Don't worry about it.
Your mind creates other places. If you want to find out what's going on in Mars or Venus or Jupiter, go within yourself. Dive deep within yourself. You'll find out. What you'll actually find out is these planets only exist because you do. What happens to them when you're sleeping? In deep sleep, they disappear. The world is
everything does.
Nothing exists.
I don't believe that. It's like if a tree falls in a forest and no one hears it, did it really fall? I don't know if it fell, but it could have.
Find out. Understand yourself and you'll know. Because if you're created mentally, there's no noise. Except for the deluded people who hear noise. Except for those deluded who hear noises. Like most of the people, most of the population hear all kinds of noise. So for them it's real.
And if I don't hear it?
Then it's not real. But you're creating it all. It's coming out of your mind. When you're asleep, everything stops. There's no world. There's nothing. But when you wake up, as it were.
Yeah, but I can observe someone in deep sleep.
No, you can't.
I can't?
When you're in deep sleep?
Not when I'm in deep sleep, no, but I can observe someone else in deep sleep and the world doesn't.
Because
their world.
Right? That's right, that's the answer.
So, but what answer is that?
They are observing it through their mind.
But concrete, relative world.
That's what you're saying in the person in deep sleep.
Yeah, I have no way of knowing that. I really have no way of knowing.
Who wants to know that?
I don't know, just you're making a statement and I'm realizing that there's no way for me to know whether your statement is true or not.
Because your ego is saying it, so I say, you dive deep within yourself mm-hmm. and you'll know. As long as you're speaking from external purposes, mm-hmm. you can never know. Dreams are creations
of the mind.
Of course.
No matter how
It makes no difference what kind of a dream it is. Think of a dream. It's externalized into a universe. And it's all taking place within yourself, in your mind. Yet you see moon, you see stars, you see the sun, you see people, you have experiences. And it's all taking place like it's real. What's happening in your mind? The world is the same way. It's happening in your mind, but you refuse to accept it. You think these things are real, and you suffer accordingly.
With response to Jay's question, one of the biggest changes for me was to change from believing that I was a body with consciousness inside of it to finding that I was consciousness that contains the body.
Yes.
And that when you see that point of view, the body is no longer real. It's just like anything else out there. Part of it, and yet you're all of consciousness. But when you have the first view, the world is real. When you're consciousness, the body's not real.
That's a good point.
It's just an object in consciousness.
Everything is consciousness. And everything that appears to forms are taking place in consciousness. All this is Brahman.
What about if I'm sitting here and my consciousness seems like it's not separate from other consciousness, yet still I somehow have a frame of reference from here.
Mm-hmm. Well, who has the frame of reference?
I don't know.
So
who has
the ego is.
Okay.
You're talking about ego things.
Okay. So
when you get rid of the ego, there will be no frame of reference.
So if you get rid of the ego totally, there's no frame of reference.
There's no frame of reference.
And so I don't even, there's nothing to do with this body. I mean, I'm not even aware it's here.
When?
If there's no ego.
If there's no ego, you'll be aware, but in a different way.
Will I be aware of all bodies?
In a different way. You'll realize all bodies are the self.
Yeah.
And you are that.
Yeah, but still I'm coming from
your perspective.
I can perceive that.
Intellectually.
But I'm coming from here.
Because that's intellectual.
Right.
But the other way, it's spiritual, it's different. It's coming from the point of the self.
Uh-huh.
I realize I am the self. But I am, of course, you.
Uh-huh.
You are myself.
And there's no here or there with you. I mean, not at all.
That's why when I see you, I see myself as consciousness. I can only see you as I see myself.
But there still seems to be what a here and there?
So?
For you?
No.
There's no here or there?
No, there's just one.
Just one.
And that's you.
And that's me.
Be still and know that I am God.
Just, Robert, for me there's something very, I don't know, seems like there's something very scary about that whole prospect or feeling or thinking that I am God.
No. I am is your ego you're referring to. Your personal individual I am is not God.
Mm-hmm.
But I am is God. You see the difference? You are not God the way you appear today. But your real self is God. So when you say I am God, you're not referring to yourself as a body.
Mm.
You're referring to the real you, which you can't see as you. You see?
I also find that when I stay with myself, quietly for any length of time, I become frightened. I get scared of that, and I have to reach out or get back in touch with or get out of myself, maybe.
Yes.
I don't know what I'm afraid of, though.
Well, those are all some scars, past tendencies coming up on you.
Mm-hmm.
What you should do is to observe them and ask them, where do they come? And tell me they come. What gave them birth? Who is their father and their mother? They come from nothing. And they return to nothing when you say it correctly. But if you agree with them, if you feel them, if you adhere in them, and they become real for you. So as soon as you begin to feel fear, immediately catch yourself and ask the question, to whom does the fear come? And wait. And the answer will be, it comes to me. As soon as the answer comes, it comes to me. Immediately abide in the me. Start feeling the me. Or you can start saying to yourself, I. I is the first name of God. You're calling upon your real nature, which is greater than the fear. And your fear will dissipate. Try.
Robert, if there's only one self, how is it that one person can be realized and another person can be in ignorance?
Because nobody's really realized. They're just a word. There's only the understanding that all this is the self. Everything that's going on anywhere is the self, an expression. I am that self. Just like a dream. I am the dream, am I not? Because I'm dreaming about everybody. I'm dreaming about the class. I'm dreaming about the world and about the universe. So I can say I am that dream. I see you in the same way. You are myself. And there's only me, but you see two or three or four multiples. So you've got a problem with me. Because you insist on seeing multiples. See yourself, and you'll see me as yourself. That's only one self. Does that make sense?
And that sounds sort of like it depends on whether you take the position of Krishna or Arjuna, whether you take the position of the Absolute or whether you take the position of Arjuna, who is a Jiva Mukta, or not a Jiva, individual self. And when you're only awareness, nothing is. But when you don't have awareness, there is multiplicity. When you don't have the Absolute, then there's multiplicity.
That's true, yes. We're talking about the Absolute. The Absolute is one. Otherwise, there's multiplicity. That's right.
When one is embodied and has attained the self, or, you know, understands that, become enlightened, then one is consciousness, I guess we're pointing out, and these are the different containers of consciousness, okay? The body, right?
The body is a container of consciousness?
Well, relative, you know, loosely speaking.
There's only one consciousness.
Yeah.
Not 10 or 12 consciousness.
Yeah, so there's one consciousness. So, do you, the person who attains that ultimate state, what is the ego? I mean, there seems to be individual ego. Someone talks about something or whatever, and different people. There seem to be different people and they're talking.
That's how it seems to you.
Yeah. So.
Where are you coming from? Yani or Ayani?
So, I want to try to understand, intellectually at least, what a Yani sees.
A Yani sees the self as one. As I said before.
So I'm talking. Do you know what I'm going to say? I mean, as it's being said, or?
No, I don't know what you're going to say. I only know that I am one with all there is.
Okay. Otherwise, you don't know, per se, what this ego is thinking in relative terms.
To me, there's no ego. The ego doesn't exist. I see you as myself. I'm not thinking anything. I don't see me as you.
Huh?
I don't see myself as you.
You don't?
I don't pick up your thoughts. Because in my state, there are no thoughts to pick up.
Oh.
Nothing exists.
Yeah.
Only emptiness.
Oh.
So how can I pick up what you're saying? There would have to be somebody home.
Do you see this
to pick up? Sure.
Body here?
I see it as myself. Just like the screen in the movie has all the forms on the screen. So I'm like the screen and you're all the forms. So I'm part of you and I'm independent of you.
Yeah, so it's, I think maybe more clear to say, is the self.
No self.
Yeah.
That's
either
sure.
One, but myself has a slight tendency for me, an ayani, to relate that to ego or just an element, very slightly. You know what I mean?
No.
You see myself. When you see me, you see myself, meaning yourself.
I see the self.
You see the self.
There's only one self.
Yeah. Is it yours?
It just exists. If it were mine, it would have to be somebody else.
What?
I would have to be someone else. To be able to say it's myself. Mine doesn't exist. There's no me or mine. There's only omnipresent self. Only the self exists. It's not mine, it's not yours.
So there's a body here that's just the self, actually.
There's nobody anywhere.
Well, from there you can see, isn't that you can see that there's a body here?
I see it as the self, not as a body.
Yeah. But there's...
Trying to pinpoint it.
Oh, I don't know. There's like air in between, almost.
For whom?
For me there is, obviously, but for you...
So ask yourself, where am I?
Where am I?
Where am I?
Where am I?
Find out.
Well, there must be a reason for illusion, though, because so many people partake in it. You know, there's about 5 billion of them who don't really have a hard time being scientific. It would be very hard to prove to them that they were one, even if it is true.
You can't prove it. You have to have your own experience. There are also 5 billion people that dream.
Right.
Do they say the dreams are real? Of course not. They wake up. And they don't all wake up together.
Well, it must serve a purpose is what I mean. Duality must serve some purpose, otherwise, what a stupid thing it is.
There's no purpose and it doesn't exist.
Well, there are a lot, as I said, there are several billion people who illusory people who perceive it as, for them, as a reality.
Who sees all this? That's your viewpoint.
It's just my viewpoint. Yes. It comes from observation, though, in the world. I didn't make it up.
Observation of whom?
Of those that these individuals that I come in contact with daily. I've not met too many people who don't express an individual personality.
And who's the observer that's speaking?
It's all with me.
And who are you? So who are you?
Well.
From what viewpoint do you speak?
Just my own little perspective.
And who are you?
Well,
that speaks.
Yeah.
Are you speaking from a point of wisdom?
No, I'm speaking just
from ego.
Yes,
exactly. That's how the ego sees the world, falsely. That's called false imagination. That's how you perceive it.
But that would be very difficult to tell all the people who experience this.
Well, who wants to tell them?
I
want
to tell them.
He wants a job.
He wants a job.
My job is to make people all the other illusions as unhappy as I am about my illusion.
Worry about yourself.
And the others will take care of themselves?
Of course.
Because they already have taken care of themselves.
Of course.
As long as I straighten it out, they're all straightened out. Isn't
so you say, then if you believe that.
Well, it must be true.
If you say so.
I'm going to make them all disappear.
Do it. Make yourself disappear first.
Robert, I have a question. Would you say that you've already said, of course, many times that karma is inevitable, that it is unfolding.
If you believe you're in the body.
Yeah, until the realization, the full realization comes. But before that comes, well, you said that the samskaras, that this can be a difficult thing for one to voluntarily increase the samskaras, if that's the right way to put it.
You will increase the samskaras by reacting to the world. In other words, if you're hit by grief, if you do not react to it, then you're in it forever. If you react to it, you'll be hit by grief again and again and again and again. You'll increase some scars.
Well, what about something like this? You know, I'm an artist, and I'm creating worlds. And right now, I'm doing a video of a book that I had done, and I'm kind of fascinated, as I have been many times before. But you kind of feel that you are creating people. They have emotions. They have this. The whole world is kind of somehow developing before your eyes. So my feeling is, will I have to pay a price for creating this? Will it lead to the need to create more and more and more and more illusion?
Yes, it will. Anything in the world that you're attached to creates greater karma.
So, but would you say that if I create these worlds and I'm not attached, then I can continue creating?
Yes, you can. Once you're not attached, you can do anything you want. But it's hard to be non-attached for some people. Do not make the mistake and say, well, it doesn't matter, you go rob a bank. And say, what's the difference? I'm not attached. You are attached. So if you weren't attached, you wouldn't rob the bank to begin with. So it's not a license for you to do whatever you like. You have to be very careful. You have to practice loving kindness, compassion, peace, joy for yourself and everybody else.
Well, wouldn't non-action be a goal also?
No. Because as I mentioned previously.
Because
as I mentioned previously, if you are meant to act in this life, you're going to act. and you have no choice. No matter how much you may try not to act, you may join a monastery, an ashram, become a monk, you won't be able to hold on to it.
No, it'll make you work.
Yeah.
Right.
Some.
You'll have to act. If you're meant to act, you'll act.
I became a monk to become a contemplative, and it kept sending me out to work.
You went to the
ashram.
You went to the wrong place.
Yeah, I went to the wrong ashram.
You come to mind, it's the opposite.
Right.
Why don't we have a little break and have some refreshments?